think most of us probably made an active choice to come to Brew this morning. Some of you, especially sometimes the younger folks who are here, may have been compelled by an external force, but most of us chose to come here this morning, right? On a Sunday morning, after a night of fun and frivolity, after losing an hour of sleep when we're always running on a sleep deficit, I have to admit that there was a little part of me that had to wake up and actively choose to get up and go this morning. Running on autopilot would have left me not running at all, but staying in bed. So I wonder then, if I chose this, if you chose this, what our options might be. As I reread the prayer, the poem from Chu Ting, I invite you to listen again to it with different ears. I invite you to think about it in terms of why you show up to Brew, why you show up to school, to work, to the voting booth, to the neighborhood association, whatever it is you are devoted to, why you show up. Perhaps these thoughts of ours will never find an audience. Perhaps the mistaken road will end in a mistake. Perhaps the lamps we light one at a time will be blown out one at a time. Perhaps the candles of our lives will gutter out without lighting a fire to keep us warm. Or perhaps in that moment, that perhaps, that glimmer of hope, can you feel it? Chu Ting writes, perhaps when all the tears have been shed, the earth will be more fertile. Perhaps when we sing praises to the sun will praise us in return. Perhaps these heavy burdens will strengthen our philosophy. In essence, she's saying perhaps we can make something good out of the difficulties we face rather than be burdened by the world around us. And then she ends, perhaps because of our irresistible mission, we have no choice. We have no choice of what we face in life sometimes. It may feel like we do. We certainly have the option to live on autopilot or sleepwalk through life. We have the option to show up for ourselves and for one another. But deep down, because of the mission we have internally and through this congregation and in the world, we recognize that we must not live into that autopilot, auto-going world, that we must choose to embrace and bless one another, to be true to ourselves and our causes of both religious liberty and freedom and justice and peace. We really have no choice but to uphold those. Because of our mission, we look past all of the potential pitfalls, and we make a sacred spiritual community with one another. Ting's line that perhaps this will end in a mistake often haunts me. Growing up, I have cared so strongly about whatever it is that I'm doing and so insecure about past failures or abandonments that I feel like I must avoid ever taking a risk because it might end in a mistake. Now, that plays out in some serious ways, and it plays out in a really stupid, trivial way. There is this trivia game that's at Dave & Buster's. You know Dave & Buster's? It's like a little arcade for adults. And so there's a trivia game, and I play it with friends, and I notice within myself the tension and the anxiety that creep up whenever there's a question to answer. This is a stupid game that I chose to play, and yet I feel so nervous, wondering if I will end up in a mistake in front of myself or others, if I will press the wrong button to a game. How then could we not feel seriously about life? That we may do the wrong thing, say the wrong thing, make a mistake, the game might then be over. We're not going to get our money back in the game of life. I don't know if you've had that similar experience, how to take a risk when you feel you might make a mistake, and yet the poem and the prayer reminds us that life calls us forth, that it's not worth it to hide back in the background, to stay on the well-trod path, to speak softly, if at all, but instead to speak up, to stand into the light, to follow whatever path your heart calls. For me, and for many of us, there are things that matter so greatly, even if we try to let them go. The timbers of our hearts and souls poke and stir a fire, and our passions grow, putting a fire in both our belly and in our bones. Think for a moment of what those things are. Are there things that matter so greatly to you that you would be willing to be arrested for them? That you would be willing to be hurt to stand up for them? That you might end your life, lose your life, to stand up for them? Maybe they're causes of justice. Maybe they're the people you love and care about. Maybe it's your own life. Whatever it is, there are things that we hold deeply that matter to us. The question isn't, how do we go to such a far extreme so that we have to put our passions ahead of all of those, but to balance them, to live in community, one with another. To do otherwise, to shrug at our own preferences and desires, to shrug at society's shortcomings, is in many ways to stamp out the fire. To extinguish it before the spark within us has the chance to jump to another, setting our souls ablaze. If you are like me, if you've been burnt before by a mistake, by being in love in a relationship, by trusting, by being part of a community, by being vulnerable, if you have been burnt, you might think it's time to hang it up and never try again. I think of the song from John Mayer. He was a guitarist who was famous for a little while, maybe a decade ago, and he talks about his stupid mouth and how he would rather not say anything so that no one would get him in trouble. There are times that we wonder if we could just quietly live through life on the periphery, on the background, or in the background, everything might be okay. We might search for the ways that we can skid through life, sleepwalk, and not make any difference. But the truth is, we make a difference, whether we want to or not. It's a shame to live that life, one of quiet, standing back, not living into who we are. It's telling that we are not called by our passions at that point. My colleague, the Reverend Kelly Weissman Jackson, offers this reading about figuring out what matters. He writes, "In the church that doesn't matter, there are no quarrels. Just like in the love, the relationship that doesn't matter, there are no arguments. In the church that doesn't matter, no one ever says they regret at the meeting what they said about the paint color. There's nothing to inspire such passionate intensity because none of the decisions touch anyone's heart. No one lives or dies by its choices. Everything is as easy as pie in the church that doesn't matter." He goes on to say, in the church that doesn't matter, no one has to talk or ask for money, talk about it much, even to wonder if there's enough to go around. There's always enough, because no matter how much there is, there's less to do than we have. The vision always shrinks to undermatch the means, and so canvas season is always a breeze. You can feel relieved that that's not the case for us. In the church that doesn't matter, no one ever disagrees with the preacher's sermon. The music is always just fine. It is, but the music is always just fine. There's never a fight about liturgy or whether or not to do joys and sorrows. No controversy at all, because no one says anything they care about. Everything, all of what the church does, is equally inoffensive at both 9 o'clock and 11 o'clock. The sounds of children during worship, the recruitment of teachers, and compensation of professional or religious educators, all of this, these are things that never are talked about or thought about in the church that doesn't matter. No one has to ever clean up in the church that doesn't matter, or figure out the old electrical system, or consult the building codes, because if it's messy on Sunday, no one complains. Everything is easier in the church that doesn't matter. Everything is easier, he ends, in the life that doesn't matter. And still, we decide again and again to ask tough questions, to take real risk, to do work that needs to be done, tell the truth, and get out of bed on Sunday morning. We may not want to. We may think it's time for someone else to make the phone call or bake the bread, but we show up because it does matter. When Pat Malarkey, a former student at Star King School for the Ministry, where she studied social change, when she told me the topic she wanted me to preach on, having bid on it at the auction, she offered her own phrasing. I have to admit, Pat, I did my own interpreting. What I heard, which is not what she said, I promise you, is that she thought I should preach on the mess at Star King. That's what I heard. If you're not familiar with that, here's a little synopsis. There was a school where Pat went, where many of us are trained, and in essence, relationships were broken. Highest expectations weren't lived up to, and it was a school that mattered. It mattered so much to so many, and it was very wrought with these feelings. We should think about the people who were there. We can talk about them in the abstract, but Pat knew many of them, as do I, and they're real, live human beings. In this situation, there were some questions about confidentiality and a document that got leaked, and people really wanted to know what happened. And so the institution, the power, started to use whatever power and resources it could to affect the individuals. This is where we come in. We are all part of institutions, whether it's this church, a school, a business, or our society. What happens then when the institution's needs outweigh the needs of an individual? How do we balance freedom in community? And what do we do when the things we hope for, the things that we put so much expectation that they will get it right, get it so wrong? We often assume that everyone on every side of an issue will be gentle and kind and will speak with the best intention. But sometimes in community, just as in relationships, we make mistakes. Our candles go out before we could light another one. We are too quick to speak and too thoughtless with our words, and we only end up hurting one another. Now, you would think that this would not happen in a church or a school about church or anything like that. That only exists in boardrooms and in business meetings. That only exists in other places. But the truth is that any organization has the opportunity to fail because we are part of the organization. One of the books that has called to me a lot is Soul at Work. And I bought the book thinking it was going to be about my internal spiritual development. But it's a very literal title. It's about finding soul in organizations. Margaret Benefiel writes that organizations are created by individuals, but necessarily go beyond them as organizations act and grow and evolve. Organizations have souls, like individuals, and we can see how that soul is manifested in how they take care of their employees, their stakeholders, the environment, the physical environment. This quality of care isn't blind to or divorced from their profit-making either. It's a part of it. Care of this kind is simple, she writes, but not easy in the real world where decisions have to be made and deadlines have to be met. This very tension is what makes organizational soul more than a policy, more than a document, but a relationship. Both at Star King, when people fought with one another and disagreed, both here at Brew, when we fight with one another and disagree, we must look beyond policy and written words to the relationship, the way that we can be ourselves at our core. It is there in which we make community. Like the children before, I want you to think about that word. You don't have to spell it out. We've already done that part. But you'll see in the order of service especially that I did the funky thing with it where I capitalized you. As Heather and Richard and Mike told me about the Canvas theme for this year, I found it critically important not to focus necessarily on the word as it usually is, but for each of us to think of what you can do to build this community. Community is centered by you. You are grounded by the community that surrounds you. You have a role to play in making this organization as great as it can be. It takes courage, another one of those CO words that has you in the middle. It takes us standing up at times, even if we don't know what we're going to say, but to speak our truth in the best intentions of our organization. Whatever it is that you want Brew to be, whatever it is you want your city to be or this country, this is the time that you need to stand up and speak. It won't all look the same. Some of us will write letters to the editor. Some of us will get up and talk and lobby congressmen and senators and presidents. Some of us will just talk to our friends about how life should change and should get better. All of this requires courage. Now, maybe you've never imagined yourself as courageous. A friend of mine, a chaplain who's in the Army, writes this. His name is George Tiger. He says, maybe you see your work as mundane because you're not kicking down doors, grabbing up bad guys, or stopping the next spectacular attack. But that does not mean that what you do does not require a real kind of courage. The kind of courage that gets you out of bed every morning and gives you the power to keep going in life and in relationships. Pima Children says, when things fall apart and we can't get the pieces back together, when we lose something dear to us, the whole thing isn't lost. This is our chance to come out of our self-protecting bubble and realize that we are, and never were, alone. Deep down in the human spirit, Pima Children writes, there is a reservoir of courage, always available, always waiting to be discovered. I want us to think about that courage within ourselves and how we can use it to build this community so that you need not stand alone. I know that I wouldn't stand a chance in the world if I were to try to engage all alone, and neither would you. But the good news, the gospel of our faith, of Unitarian Universalism, is that we are not alone even when we would rather be. We are connected to one another. My fate impacts your fate. So the question is, what do we do with it? Look at that word community in the order of service. Sometimes you are stuck in the middle, and it might feel like the other letters are just pressing up against you, and you need your personal space. Sometimes we wonder if you ought to shine bigger and brighter and bolder than all the other letters, or if there's a way to make everyone equal. I want you to know that whoever you are, whatever you bring to the table, you are here for a reason. I don't mean that in a general you, universal, but I mean that Art is here for a reason, and Mark and Sterling and Mary Beth, every one of you are here for a reason. When the people and things we love don't go the way we wish they would, it's our call to grow, to stoke the fire of love between us, the fire of commitment, rather than watch the flame burn low. That's the hardest part, thinking that maybe it's someone else's to do, that if we stay silent, everything will work out, or just being so tired that we don't want to get out of bed and do the hard work. Not today. We've been burned too much. And yet we are charged. Each of you are charged to be in the center of community. Whatever the community is you choose, however you choose to engage with it, but to be there so that it can surround you and support you, so that the divine spark within you might be seen and shared. I give thanks for each of you and for the spark of love and light that we see in one another and share. Now may we go forth and do that with the world. Amen, and blessed be.